Well, hello everybody, and welcome to another Rowing Chat. And this time, just to make things different, for once, I actually have my guest with me. Ruth, welcome to Rowing Chat.
Well, thank you very much, and it's a real pleasure to be here and to be in Auckland and New Zealand.
Fantastic. So Ruth and I first met online because she was writing really interesting blogs about rowing, and we'll get onto that a little bit later, but why don't we kick off? Tell the listeners a bit about yourself and your background in rowing.
Sure. I've had this company, Rowing the World, for 7 years now. And it's built off of the love of I have for both rowing and for travel. And I've been very fortunate to have been working in the adventure traveling industry for about 30 years. I used to have a cycling and walking tour company focused primarily on self-guided tours in Europe, also in Canada. And after having that company for 15 years, I needed a break. I got out of the business and then I missed being in adventure travel. And so after not too much time, I decided to combine those two passions of rowing and travel, because I have been a rower for about 20 some years. So the travel industry experience and my rowing experience have overlapped for a while.
So were you the very first rowing vacation company?
No, I think there was one in Tuscany, rowing vacations, had been rowing, running some trips locally for before I did. I didn't know of them when I actually first started the company. But definitely I was the first company to offer international tours and in a diversity and range of countries and a diversity of styles of tours. Since then, I'm actually quite happy to see that there are a number of different companies that have appeared, in particular local people who run, you know, sort of specialized tours in their area that they know so well. And that pleases me, because I would really like to see rowing travel grow. I think it's a fabulous aspect of our sport and perhaps a little underappreciated, unknown. So the more that people can travel to row, the better.
Yeah, so my experience of traveling to row is really being somewhere, usually for work, and calling up the local club and asking if I can go rowing. But that's not what happens on a rowing holiday, is it?
No, the rowing is the focus of the trip. It's the point of why you traveled. You travel to row as opposed to rowing when you travel. And we create week-long holidays, typically also some weekend holidays. And we always are going to beautiful locations. So the concept is to take the sport that we love and enjoy it in absolutely stunning locations. And of course, also eat well, have good beverages in the evenings, and get to know the countries, both the landscapes, but also the culture and the history, and especially the people. We connect really well with rowers internationally, as you know from your experiences. Mm-hmm. Rowers like to talk to rowers. And it's remarkable how you can take a group of people from several different countries, put them into one quad, and without having rowed before together, off they go and they can make that boat move.
Huh. Well, great skill, and compliment to you setting that up. So let me roll back a bit. What is the concept of adventure travel?
Well, adventure travel is a niche form of travel. And the idea is that you are not just seeing the world through a windscreen of, say, a cruise ship or a bus or even your car. It is typically involves both activity. It could be rowing, it could be walking, it could be cycling. It also typically has a social component to it, usually an interactive with a social in terms of interacting with local people. And adventure travel is usually defined as also having a strong cultural component. In other words, you are more directly immersing yourself in a place and you use your activity, which is typically slower. You know, you're moving slower, you have more time to appreciate the landscape, more time to learn and see what the environment and is that you're moving through. So adventure travel started off as a bit of a more hardcore kind of activities, you know, river rafting, mountain climbing. And the spectrum of what's now adventure has become quite wide. You've got even more extremes, but you've also got much softer kinds of adventure. So, you know, just a walking tour is an adventure trip. It's an active holiday adventure travel.
Ah, fantastic. Now, I'm guessing the boats you use are specialized, because do they have to take suitcases in the boat? I mean, how does that work?
No, we don't have to do that, although one day I'm going to do a camping trip where we can take our gear with us. If you think of what a bicycle holiday is or a walking vacation is, it's similar to that, except that we take the sport we love and enjoy it in beautiful locations. Typically, we are staying in very nice accommodations. When the luggage is moved, it's probably by bus or by boat or whatever, and we spend our portion, all or some of the day, rowing, and should we change accommodations, our luggage magically appears. Yes.
I like this.
Yeah, so it's a full package, vacation.
Yeah.
Essentially, everything is included once you're there. Maybe one or two meals are not built into the price, but it's a full package vacation.
And what sort of boats are you using?
Well, mine is a partnership model. I like partnering with local clubs. I like being able to return something to the rowing community. And besides, the local rowers know their water.
Yeah.
So I typically hire the boats. Hire a local guide, hire a safety boat if there's trailering required. I pay all of that to a local club or some kind of partner. There are some partners who are offering the tour, the product on a commercial basis, but typically I'm working with clubs and it's wonderful.
So you're using regular fine boats?
Not so much, actually. Sorry, I didn't answer your question. It depends a little bit on the water conditions and what the clubs have to offer. Typically, we're rowing recreational boats, so they are larger, a bit more stable. Yes, you can carry a few more things for the day, so extra layers, sunscreen, water, some snacks. And increasingly, I'm using coastal boats on my trips, even those trips on fresh water.
So that makes it much less requirement that you're massively skillful in the rowing. So if you're not so good at rowing, you can row square blades in one of those and you'll be fine.
Well, they're very stable boats. Yeah. That's true. And the reason we use them is not because of less skilled rowers, but more because we can then deal with a variety of conditions. So if wind kicks up, we're doing a 20 or 30 kilometer day, and the wind comes up during the course of the day, we are safer and we have a greater likelihood of being able to complete the row. It also opens up so many more opportunities to travel and row in places that you would never be able to row with a finer boat.
Of course.
We do have, I think that's maybe one of the misconceptions about rowing tours and rowing travel, is that it's sort of for people who are not good enough to race. That's the one thing I hear all the time. And it's not true. I have many guests who are racers, and in fact, we have one tour coming up in 2020 in Austria, and it's timed deliberately to immediately follow the World Masters Rowing Regatta in
Linz.
That's it. So we're doing a trip, and we have people already signed up who are doing exactly that. They're coming for the racing and staying for the touring. And we do have a validation process. We do have minimum requirements of rowing experience. If we're not quite sure, if there's something that is kind of flagged during when we see the registration come in, we might talk to the coach and we have told people they're not ready to take one of our tours. Because it's not racing, but it still requires a level of fitness, and especially requires a very good level of competence. You're doing the same, you're rowing for 30 kilometers. You're getting tired by the end of that row. So you need that body memory and that automatic technique to carry you through when you might get tired.
That's really good advice. And of course, no one likes being, in a boat with someone who's not pulling their weight.
Correct. Yes. And there's no guarantee, as I'm sure there are people who have rowed for 20 years and you really don't want to be in a boat with them. And then there are others who have rowed for maybe 2 years and it's an absolute joy to jump in a boat and row with them. So, length of time is not necessarily a criteria. It is hard to screen people. And we try to make our trips very approachable and very enjoyable for all people involved. So we work around different abilities, and we ensure to our best ability that everybody actually gets the kind of rowing trip they wanted.
So what happens if you're bringing a non-rowing partner with you on the tour?
We always try to include some kind of program, and depends on the location, how much we can adapt or not. For example, our British Columbia Wilderness Tour, the non-rowing program is essentially kayaking, self-guided kayaking, because there are no roads. It's a wilderness lodge. You can only get there by water. So, you know, that's sort of the only choice. Whereas in Italy, for example, with our Lago Maggiore tour or our Lago di Como, Lago di Garda tour, we have a program that we often will bring a separate guide. We will take the guests, and depending on their interests, maybe we'll take them walking, cycling, maybe on extra visits to gardens, castles, those kinds of things. And we've had some non-rowing companions who really are just quite happy to sit in the cafe or
and wait
and have a lie-in and a late breakfast. And so it really, we try to dial it in. Again, the focus of the tour is on the rowers and the rowing.
Yeah.
And so and we're very clear, I think, in our material that that's the case, but we're happy to welcome non-rowing companions.
So you don't make them cocks?
No, every once in a while they want to, but we make everybody cocks.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There is no set seat in the boat. So every day we go out, the night before, we have a briefing with our guests, and we tell them which boat they're in and which seat they're sitting in. And typically, everybody rotates through the coxswain seat. And initially, people might say, well, you know, I came to row. It's like, so did everyone else. Sometimes the coxswain seat becomes the primo seat because you have the best views of the scenery.
Can you, like, steer and take photos?
You absolutely can, speaking from experience.
That's a good point. Yes, you're looking where you're going.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you've mentioned that there are some different style of tours. You've mentioned fine boats and coastal boats. They're usually cox quads, though, aren't they?
Typically. We also will run doubles sometimes, depending on the numbers. Mm-hmm. And we occasionally have run a single. But we need to, you know, we are obviously clear or careful about who goes into the single. Yes, typically cox quads, that's our boat of choice. They're very social boats. Mm-hmm. And then also having someone coxing takes the pressure off the bow seat in terms of being able to just relax and enjoy the rowing. And particularly scenery, I mean, this is one case where it's eyes out of the boat, like look around.
So do you kind of come to an accommodation when someone wants to take a photograph that you all kind of stop for a break?
Oh, absolutely. And we're stopping for water breaks too, and to appreciate the scenery. We have, it's a tour. It's not a race. We're typically rowing at a lower rate. You know, we want to really just experience this amazing landscape that we're rowing through.
I like. Now, tell me where you can go.
Well, we have a multitude of tours, and every year we're adding tours, and we have a certain number that we only run sporadically. So most years we're running between 12 and 15 tours in 9 to 10 countries.
Wow.
So a lot of choice, and yes, I like to travel as well as
you picked the job that suits you, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So we have trips in Canada, in Austria, in Australia, New Zealand. I was just here running a trip in your lovely country. And in a lot in Europe, you know, which England, of course, Ireland, Italy, France, sometimes Switzerland, Germany. I've also run tours in South Africa. I hope to do so again soon in the Maldives. So, you know, there are many places. We've had a few. We did a tour once in Belize, believe it or not, in Central America. But we won't be able to repeat that one. That was a tough one. There are no rowing shells in Belize. So we brought oar boards in. We flew in all the equipment.
And then strapped to the top of them, the sliding rigger thing.
Yes, exactly.
Very smart. I've often thought that that would be a really good way of having a community rowing club, because all boards are reasonably easy to find, aren't they?
That's right. And they're relatively inexpensive, and they are transportable.
Yeah, exactly. And they break down and pack that.
Yes.
except for the fin. I'm sure you can manage that. So what have you done this year? Actually, this year's November, isn't it? You've just said that you've done. So let's talk in detail about the tour you just finished. So where did your guests fly into in New Zealand?
We were on the South Island on the Alpine Lakes, the Alps area. Our guest flew into Queenstown. We had people from the United States, both Maryland and Colorado, and also quite a few from different parts of Australia.
Oh, nice.
And of course, I came from Canada.
Yes.
So,
and don't confuse them.
No, I'll say a few times.
Then they'll think you're from New Zealand.
Oh, is that right?
No, say a too.
Oh, okay, so there are commonalities between New Zealand and Canada. Yeah. So yeah, we, and that's typical of our tours. We let people know where they need to be by what time everyone arrives, and then we begin the tour. This was a case, this is an example of what I would call a sampler type tour, where we worked with two different rowing clubs and did a variety of rows in different locations. New Zealand is a small enough country that there aren't any waters that you can really do a very long and a point-to-point row. But there are so many choices of fabulous lakes and rivers. So that sampler worked very well, where we could truly sample different types of water bodies. And what's fantastic about New Zealand is just the diversity of landscapes within a comparatively small area. So we were on an alpine lake, we were on a river in a semi-desert with vineyards all along.
You're going to have to tell us where these places are.
Wanaka is where we started, and it's absolutely mind-bogglingly beautiful there.
And that's a lake, an alpine lake.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And then we also rode in Cromwell, which is on the Clutha River, which has been dammed to create Dunstan, Lake Dunstan.
So you go Clyde to Cromwell?
Well, and we went off, launched, and very bad wind came up.
What a shame. Because that is a race I've actually done.
So yes.
18K long distance race.
Yes. Our plan was to go from Cromwell to Clyde.
Nice.
Yeah. But so we'll have to do that.
So that was your river one. And then when did you go after that?
And then we went up to Queenstown and Lake Wakatipu.
Wakatipu, yeah, that's right.
And we went up to Lanorki. We rode on at Frankton Arms, and that was lovely because it's very close to Queenstown. It's sort of a semi-urban feel. Whereas Cromwell is kind of, as I said, it's a semi-desert. It's you feel
it's more like the Douro, where you have literally just rock faces coming down.
Yes,
into the water,
exactly.
In Portugal,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, and whereas in like Wanaka, where we went, we were truly just off in the, not in the middle of nowhere, but it was. Felt quite remote.
Yep.
So our plan, we had hoped to do a final row at Glenorchy, which is one of the most spectacular places in New Zealand. But again, it is, New Zealand's a windy country. And we had, everybody knew this coming in, so everybody had packed their hiking boots, and instead we did a spectacular hike.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
That was not a wasted day.
No, definitely not.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. Now, you came here twice this year from Canada. Tell us about your previous trip where you were a guest on someone else's tour.
I was, and very happy to be that. The World Rowing, or FISA, runs, they call it the World Rowing Tour every year. And in 2019, it was on Marlborough Sounds here in New Zealand. And it was an absolute spectacular trip. I was delighted to have been selected, because you have to be selected. Yes, because there's usually more people who apply. And FISA likes to keep a diversity of nationalities. So they only
too many Canadians. Not a problem I have.
Yeah. So anyway, I was fortunate to be selected, and that was perfect because I was planning to come to New Zealand to research my own tour. Yeah. So I had a wonderful time, and that was a coastal tour, which I would am a great advocate. And so it was delightful.
And the coastal, so the Marlborough Sounds is actually part of the ocean. But they're like the fjords in Norway. They have long fingers of water right into the land.
Absolutely.
They're quite sheltered.
Yeah.
And in coastal boats, again, coxswains.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you told me how many people did this tour?
60 people.
It's a big event.
Yeah. Now, an interesting thing about this particular tour and the previous tour is that FISA, World Rowing, is attempting to expand rowing into countries that are not currently rowing nations. Mm-hmm. And many of those countries that currently don't have a rowing program are island nations, yeah, or have, you know, are surrounded by water. They don't have nice lakes for flat water boats. So coastal rowing is an opportunity. Everybody who participated in the World Rowing Tour on Marlborough Sounds made a contribution through their fees that helped to buy the coastal boats and have them shipped to American Samoa and start a rowing program in American Samoa. And next year's World Rowing Tour will be, or will hopefully be, in American Samoa. So it's wonderful to see rowing become a form of tourism and help develop both our sport, but also support tourism and travel.
That's true. Now, I know that your professional background is also in ecology. So does that also fit in with your passion for touring rowing?
Yes, it does. I have a master's degree in plant ecology, which is a bit unusual and esoteric. And it got me started in environmental consulting. But I got that degree because I'm passionate about the environment and I like to be outdoors. So it translates into rowing holidays in the sense that I really pay attention to where we are going and the landscapes that we go into. We're also increasingly bringing in sustainability practices into the business. So, for example, we do not provide water bottles anymore. We used to be, we'd have flats and water bottles. I mean, it's a classic one. We are also looking at carbon offsetting for our tours. We ensure that we also stay at hotels that have good sustainability practices and things like that, because I believe in travel. I think travel is a tremendous opportunity for improvement in the world and interactions among different people and improved understandings. But it's also a way to appreciate the environment, the planet Earth, that also understanding water and water quality issues and how that is so significant for rowing. We have to have good water and sometimes enough water. We had a problem, for example, in October, for our France trip on the Dordogne River. Mm-hmm. Not enough water to
row. In the Dordogne? It's a big river.
It's a big river, and there wasn't enough water to row every day that we wanted because of the drought that they had had, the tremendously hot summer that they had. That's something we take for granted. You should be able to row there. Not always.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a great time anyway. We adapted and did lots of
fun. It sounds to me like thinking on your feet is one of your particular skills, Ruth.
Well, you have to. And I've been in this business for a while.
How do you research a new location? Because you mentioned you've been to lots of different countries, but how do you scout out a new location and prepare it?
It varies. Typically, it's driven by two things. One is interest. When I have a very high percentage of repeat guests on my trips, and they might say, Ruth, we want to go rowing in Greece, or we want to go rowing here. Can you make a trip for us? So then I start to research it. It's also driven a bit by opportunity.
Yeah.
So, using the Greece example, that was
a real one.
Absolutely. I ran two trips in Greece, in northern Greece this year. And it was based on some guests saying, I would love to row in Greece. Can you do something? Mm-hmm. And then also being connected to, and in fact, you've interviewed Nikos from Thessaloniki.
I have. Yeah, he's a big fan of coastal rowing, isn't he?
Exactly. Yeah. And so Glenn Batten, who's a friend of mine, had said to me, you need to know Nikos. I think the two of you could run great trips together. And so it wasn't coming. And finally, I just said, I have to go to Greece. I have to meet Nikos, and we have to see what we can do. Right. So Nikos knew the area. He had the coastal boats. He had suggestions. And so together we, in fact, were able to put together a tour. We call it Northern Greek Beach Paradise, which it is. So I think it's those.
And that was on the ocean or that was river rowing?
Yes, it was all coastal rowing.
All coastal, okay.
Yeah.
Because Thessaloniki is quite a long way from Northern Greece. Southwest, is it not?
No, it is actually in Northern Greece, in Macedonia. We started in Thessaloniki and did a row there, and then we went down to the Hakaliki Peninsula and were rowing on the Aegean. So it was absolutely spectacular. So that's how things will come together, or I will have I'll have an idea and I start to research it, and then I start talking to clubs. So when I leave here, I'm going to Australia. Mm-hmm. I already run two wonderful trips in Australia. One is to Tasmania and one is to the Clarence River.
Where is the Clarence River? Good.
That was my reaction.
Who's Clarence?
I had sent out, when I was first setting this up, I sent out sort of a call for ideas to a whole host of people. Australian rowing clubs.
Yeah.
And I got this beautiful proposal back from the Grafton Rowing Club about the Clarence River. And I'm kind of like, Clarence. And I was looking at all these other ideas and they kept falling through. And finally I went back to the good people in Grafton and said, could we maybe look at that a trip? And so the Clarence River is in the northern part of New South Wales, very close to the Queensland border.
Okay.
And it's one of our trips that is one of the relatively rare trips where it's possible to do point-to-point rowing. We rowed from the uppermost place where you can put a rowing shell in, 100 kilometers to the Pacific Ocean. It was spectacular. Unbelievable. I had Australians on that trip who couldn't believe that this was in their own country.
So this was a weekend trip, this one?
A week-long trip.
One week, 100 kilometers.
Woo. Yeah. So I'm going back to Austria because I will offer Clarence and Tasmania. Tasmania's amazing. Again, next year in 2020. But I have had a lot of people say they want to roam Queensland. So I'm going to find into Brisbane, going up to Noosa, and I've got, meetings with four or five different clubs already set up just to get a sense of what's possible. Mm-hmm. So that's how it sort of can evolve. People will give me ideas or I'll get an idea. It depends on the location.
I get that. Now, you mentioned that you have to be able to row 20 or 30 kilometers in a day. How long is the longest single stretch that people have to be able to row near continuously?
I'd say the longest row that we have is actually a weekend trip. It's the Vogelonga, which many people may know. And it's, in essence, you row 42 kilometers in one go.
Yeah.
And it's the Vogelonga event itself is about 32 kilometers, but where we stay is 5 kilometers. You have to row to the start and then row 5 kilometers back at the end. So that's 42 kilometers. And I've done it twice and without ever getting out of the boat.
It's tough.
Yeah. So, usually we don't impose that on our guests. We have breaks and opportunities to get that out because sometimes it's not just the fitness of being able to row for that duration and the sort of repetitive motion. Sometimes it's just really hard to sit that long.
Oh, my. I know.
Yeah. So we do it's important for people to realize that just because you go and row 10 kilometers three times a week out of your rowing club, that's not sufficient preparation. Everybody can get in a boat and row the first day of 30 kilometers or even 20 kilometers. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that we are rowing multiple days in succession, sometimes with a day off and sometimes not. Mm-hmm. That's what people really need to train for. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a bike trip. Everybody can go out and ride 60K. Mm-hmm. But to, say, ride 60 kilometers 5 days in a row is what becomes more challenging. So we do encourage, as I said, we have a validation process just to make sure that people are well suited. Some of our trips are harder than others, so we try to make sure that we are directing people into a trip that suits them and will give them a positive experience. And we also very much encourage people to train. And to me, I think you train to race. Why wouldn't you train to tour? You know, so it's a reason to get out in a boat and row and prepare. And in fact, I know that rowing travel is a motivation for masters rowers, for people to take up the sport and also to stay in the sport, because perhaps they've decided they're not going to race for anymore or only once a year, for any number of reasons, but they love the sport and they want a reason to get up in the morning and go out, besides of course the joy of, you know, rowing. Or it's something to look forward to. It's like, next year I'm going to go and row the River Thames with Rowing the World. Or I'm going to do that Canadian Wilderness Tour, or you know, the Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia Tour, and I need to just build up, you know, my skills a little bit.
I had a question from a listener actually yesterday saying, I'm in the doldrums. It's winter. He was in the north of the US. We've packed our boats away. We won't be rowing. And we've got nothing until springtime, except an herb competition. What should I be doing? So touring is a really good example.
Absolutely. And I have, some of my trips are timed. For example, I have trips in March and April in Australia. And often that's when I run my my South Africa tour and potentially a New Zealand tour. It's for the Northern Hemisphere rowers. It's usually, you know, just maybe they're not even on the water yet or just barely. So it kind of gives them a leapfrog into the season. Our New Zealand trip was just run in November. And I anticipate having some new trips in November for next year, potentially in the United States or Bahamas. And it sort of is after the end of the main racing season, so now kind of can wind down and relax and reward yourself with a rowing trip.
Well, if anyone listening wants to come to New Zealand in April, we can organize some flat water racing if you want to do racing as well.
Yeah.
So can you get fit for touring rowing on an erg?
Of course you can, but there is nothing like being on the water. And I don't think you want to do 30K on an erg.
Fair dues. I wouldn't choose.
But, you know, you don't, for those who live in, say, Northern Hemisphere, where you can't necessarily be on the water all winter long, there are many other sports that allow you to retain fitness.
And of course.
I'm a big advocate of cross-country skiing.
Yeah, I would love to try that.
Oh, it's a great sport.
Now, I first noticed you, you came to my attention, because you have a really active blog. When did you actually start blogging?
Pretty much around the time that I started the company. So I was researching in 2012 and launched in January of 2013 and started the blog pretty much right away. It's because I think there's so much about rowing. There's so much more than just, say, you know, 1,000 or 2,000 meters down a straight course. That's great. That's an important, essential part of our sport. But there are so many other aspects. And the longer I've been in the running this company, the more I'm constantly learning about all the various kinds and aspects of rowing. So I think it's fun to explore those. Some of our blogs are tongue-in-cheek. We just have fun. We talk about food or coffee. We had a recent one on coffee. And but others are also trying to share some of that knowledge, because I think often we can be a bit myopic as rowers, and we're just not aware of all these fantastic things that make up our sport.
So talk us through, these are your coastal rowing blog posts. Talk us through these.
Yes, well, I'm a great advocate of coastal rowing. I think it's a great enhancement. I think you have to be a very good flat water rower, and then you add coastal. There are many additional and new skills you need for coastal rowing. As I said, it really opens up. So in these blog posts, for example, the most current one is about the trip we just had in Greece. You can see us out bouncing around in the Aegean there in spectacular landscape. And it just talks about how coastal rowing allowed us to really explore this landscape. It's also very interesting to talk about how you really need to learn to adapt your rowing skills to, as Nikos would say, to dance with the water.
Yeah.
The next one is Coastal Rowing Update. That I wrote in June of 2019. As we'll see, the first blog post I ever wrote about coastal was in 2014. And that's when I was first introduced to the concept of coastal rowing and was just absolutely enamored instantly. I realized how much fun it can be and how it really can allow you to do so much more with our sport. So, in the interim, in those intervening periods, I went on the case for coastal boats on lakes was a blog post after I attended the FISA World Rowing Tour in Lago Maggiore, which, by the way, has evolved into my Lago Maggiore trip.
I had guessed there might be a connection.
Yes. And we rowed coastal boats on fresh water. Mm-hmm. And they may be heavier. And then on coastal and salt water, they obviously they float a little bit more than they do on fresh. But regardless, as you can see even in that photo, Lago Maggiore is a very large lake and it really blows up very quickly. There were a couple of circumstances. I was on another FISA tour in Ireland where boats sank. Huh. Recreation, you know, flat water boats sank. Yeah. We were on conditions on Lago Maggiore that were worse than that in coastal boats. Not a problem.
I mean, you were just fine. We were right over the top of the waves.
Correct, correct. So I make the case for coastal boats on lakes. The next one, that why all rowers should care about coastal rowing, has probably been my most popular blog post ever. And it really is explaining why some of the debate about coastal versus flat water. People, flat water rowers are often seem to feel that coastal detracts from regular racing. Mm-hmm. And I feel that, in fact, all of us should really care about coastal. It's important for our sport for a number of different reasons. So that's that was what that post was all about. And I did make the point that countries such as Canada and New Zealand are very behind the ball, behind the eight ball in terms of being ready for coastal rowing, should it come into the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, and I did make the point in that that these days, if you're a Canadian, you could basically show up at the World Championships for coastal rowing and row for Canada. So, anyway, then I tried in the next post, how different exactly is coastal rowing, is to try and help people understand the differences, because there are a lot of misunderstandings. Just like with tour rowing, a lot of people who have just their only exposure to rowing is training and racing. They don't understand how tour rowing is different in a valid form of our sport. Same with coastal rowing. Mm-hmm. Just again, trying to deal with some of the misunderstandings, like, for example, that it's just sloppy technique, which is not true.
It's dancing with the water, I now know.
Exactly. And, just helping, again, it's these kind of blog posts I write because I'd like to share some knowledge. I'd like people to better understand our sport.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic. And please take a look, guys, at the website for Rowing the World, which is, I'll put it up. There we go, rowingtheworld.com. Couldn't be easier, really. And so we'll go back to understanding what else have you got on your website. So if someone wants to have a little fantasizing in their lunch break, what should they be looking at?
Yes, well, I'm always trying to tempt people. We are working on our 2020 program. We have a number of tours that are now finalized and up for open for registration. So, for example, our two Australia trips, Tasmania and the Clarence River. Also, our Lago Maggiore trip. And actually, Lago Maggiore this year is something we're going to try, which is completely different. And again, you'd asked me earlier, how do I design trips? Well, we've started doing some specialized trips. So, for example, 3 years ago, we did our first ever women's only tour.
Oh, okay.
Which was very successful. That was the first one was on Lago Maggiore. The next year, actually this year, it was in Ireland. And we're about to announce in 2020 it will be on the Thames. So that's been a really real success, and we're going to continue that initiative. And I had several different rowers come to me and say, why don't you do an LGBTQ tour?
Okay, why not?
Why not? I know nothing about this community, so I approached the have to make sure I get the
GLRF.
Yes,
Gay and Lesbian Rowing Federation.
Yes.
Yep, I know
that. So now we started being working together with them a bit, and we've decided that Lago Maggiore will be our first ever LGBTQ tour.
You better buy a new flag. I see you have flags on the back.
Okay, we will have to. So we're going to do that. We have a new tour that's open for registrations now in Italy, the Lago di Como, Lago di Garda tour, which we're excited about because it's just lined up just before our Vogelonga tour of 2020.
So you're going to live in Italy for much next year.
Yes, it's not a hard thing to do. We're going to be adding some new trips. We're looking to add a trip in Canada, in Quebec.
Okay.
So that's a work in progress. I'm hoping to run an additional, a new trip in France on the Seine River, the lower reaches, the most northern section. So working on that. So some of our old favorites are going to be repeated as usual. We've got Ireland again with the Cork and Carberry Island. And that, by the way, is the perfect trip for someone who would like to test out coastal rowing.
Okay.
Yeah. So we've got lots on the go. Our Russia trip is always a very interesting tour.
Is that St. Petersburg?
Yes. Mm. Spectacular.
Yeah, that is an amazing river.
Yeah.
Now, listeners, if you would like to know more, Ruth, what should they do if they want to find out more about what you're up to?
Well, we very much encourage people to get on our electronic newsletter mailing list. We send that out maybe once a month or a little less, maybe 10 times a year. And it's not only to announce when our new trips are ready. We also love to share different initiatives. We'll often, if somebody else is doing a rowing club, let's say a club is doing a tour, we'll help promote their tours for them. We'll talk about things like training. It's meant to be a rowing travel newsletter, not just a promo newsletter. Mm-hmm. So we think that's an ideal way to stay in touch and follow what we're doing. Of course, we're on social media. We've got a Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram accounts. And often we're using those again to share things that others are doing. Also, I've just been posting some of our photos from New Zealand. So we enjoy that too. We like to share information from other people. We're often sharing posts, again, spreading the word about all the marvelous things that have rowing. So go on our contact page. The link is there, and you can sign up for the newsletter, or they can also, people are very welcome to send us an email and contact us. We're happy to answer questions.
So that's rowingtheworld.com/contact. And if they want, that's the best way to get in touch with you as well.
That's correct.
Fantastic. Any last thoughts for challenges for our listeners?
Well, I would challenge people to go and row somewhere where you've never rowed before in 2020.
That is a challenge I will happily take up. I will have to have a think about that.
Excellent.
Ruth, it's been a delight. Thank you so much for coming to New Zealand and being a face-to-face guest. What an original thing for me. And it's been lovely. I'm really intrigued, and I can see how passionate you are and how you successfully combine your ecology, your understanding of adventure travel, and your love of the sport of rowing. So thank you for being a beacon for the rest of us.
Oh, you're welcome, and thank you very much for having me. It's been fun.
Till next time, goodbye.